Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Confessions of a Debut Novelist with me, your host, Chloe Timms. This week, I'm talking to Crystal Zara Appiah about her contemporary novel, Rootless. Crystal is a British Ghanaian writer, editor and screenwriter based in London. She has a degree in literature and creative writing from the University of Kent. In 2020, she was one of 40 writers selected for the London Library's Emerging Writers Programme. In this episode, we discuss writing to break stigmas about Black women's mental health, how Rootless started life as a NaNoWriMo novel, and how it felt to lose 60,000 words. But before that, here's Crystal with an excerpt from Rootless.
Sam comes to, with his face buried in the musty sofa, head hidden beneath a cushion, his first thought of Epe. 5 days have passed since he last saw his wife. He thinks back to the last time he saw her, straight backed at the dining table, one knee pulled up under her chin, her gaze fixed on the middle distance. He'd watched long ribbons of steam curl up from her mug and peter out into nothing. Her face was dewy with heat, her twist pulled back by a satin headscarf. Sam had paused, palming a warm cup of coffee, and just stood there, looking at her. A long, drawn-out moment had passed before she lifted the mug to her lips and drank. The conversation that followed was normal. Still, over the last 4 days, Sam's replayed it in his mind and sifted through her words for hidden meanings. He remembers chatting about work, Phoebe, deciding who'd take Liv to the childminder's house. He'd made a comment about the tea she'd been drinking, more of a non-comment, a dumb question really. He'd expected her to nod and agree. Instead, she'd said nothing, only stared at him like she didn't recognise him, like it was the furthest thing from her mind. So Sam had let it go, regretted saying anything at all. 6 hours later, she was gone. Sam flops over onto his back, feels heaviness in his sand-filled head. Through the thin curtains, he sees the sky is a watered-down navy. His phone is already in his hand. Blue-white light skewers the darkness. He squints at the screen, scrolls past the endless stream of notifications, emails, WhatsApp messages, hoping for something from her. Over the last 5 days, he's listened to the voicemail 37 times, memorised it, wallowed in it. He checks flight prices hourly, logs into their joint bank account and does the mental gymnastics. Even if he borrows money, he has both the plane ticket and expedited visa to consider, so it will be tight. Sam sighs and wipes the trail of dried saliva from his cheek. He tells himself it will be fine. Any moment now, she'll walk in.
Hi, Crystal. Welcome to the podcast. I'm really excited to have you on with me today to discuss your debut novel, Rootless.
Thank you for having me.
So can you start by telling us what Rootless is about?
Sure. At its core, Rootless is a love story about two people who want radically different things. So Sam is committed to having a family. He's always wanted to be a parent, and that is Efe's worst nightmare. And despite the fact they love each other, it's just something that's going to push them to breaking point.
And that's a kind of heartbreaking element to their love story because, as a reader, we're really rooting for them to, pardon the pun, rooting for them to really get there and to have that love story, and particularly because we see them throughout their lives from kind of teenagers onwards, and it's heartbreaking because we know really that they should be together, but their differences are giving them kind of problems. I was wondering, Crystal, if you could tell us a little bit about where that first spark came from, that inspiration.
A few places. So I think even before I started writing, I just had this image of, I knew it was going to be about a couple. I had this image of this couple together, and very first image I had of the book, after I guess kind of coming up the initial idea, was the scene where FA is at the train station and is kind of hysterical. And there was something about the character I really wanted to know, and it changed shape a few times, but originally it was about them, and it was about them struggling, them figuring life out, choosing to be together when very much in FA's part, particularly, she's living a life she hadn't imagined and hadn't wanted for herself. And I guess it kind of came about both of them and their story in that. But also I went on a family holiday to Ghana in I think it was 2016, 2017, and I hadn't been since I was a child. And as soon as I got there and loved it, I really wanted to kind of celebrate it through writing. So I guess at that point this novel became more about moving between places and wide identity issues and just kind of the quirks and just incredible aspects of Ghanaian culture.
Tell us a little bit then about FA's relationship with Ghana and because her parents play quite a significant role in her life and they're in Ghana, not in London. And then they have that distance, but they have quite strong opinions of what FA should be doing in her life. Tell us a little bit about that relationship and what Ghana means to FA.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess to FA, Ghana is a safe space. It's probably where she'd choose to be without any responsibilities. If she didn't have anything tying her to London, it's most likely where she would have probably chosen to be, where she has space, but there's also pressure in that community. And at times it's stifling for her. So I guess it's kind of similar to her parents. It's like the two sides of that coin. One can be really incredible and supportive and uplifting and just freeing. And at the same time, there's a way in which she has to live and operate, which she doesn't necessarily have to do elsewhere. So it's, I guess it's, two sides of the same thing.
Is this the first novel that you've written, or have you kind of attempted to write novels before?
I've been writing since I was a child, funnily enough. But this is the first thing I would happily say that I am proud of and did more than like a first draft on. I've started and stopped lots of things, but I think when I started Rootless, I'd left something else to work on Rootless, and I had to come to these characters because they were just starting to form. I was just getting really intrigued by them and I knew how it would end. So I was very much like, well, how are they gonna get there? So
What point did you realize that this book had some real potential, or did it was it not that? Was it just that you felt like you had to finish whatever the consequences?
Oh, funny. I guess for me, working in publishing, I work in children's books, so working in publishing, I had an idea of the standard books were when they came to us. So I guess for me, it was kind of shaping it into something that hopefully had potential because I adored this character, these characters, and I adored this story, and I was like, well, I hope someone else can get on board of them. So I guess it was kind of, seeing what I was aiming for and trying to kind of give this story that space to grow and breathe and to become something that would hopefully have potential.
I'd love to talk a little bit about the structure of the novel because we start with this opening where FA's gone somewhere and Sam's desperately trying to track her down. And we know that we're leading to a pivotal moment, which I will not spoil. But then each chapter is we take a look through FA and Sam's life together and apart, and their relationship kind of almost year by year. And I was wondering kind of what led you to structuring the novel in that way.
Actually, funny enough, it did change a few times because the timeline was initially more complicated. But it had always begun, or pretty much always begun, with this kind of breaking point of someone fleeing, someone leaving, and us being left this question. Because I guess for me, I knew that a big chunk of the novel would be about their relationship and their miscommunications, them finding a way to be together. So I guess everything was kind of leading up to that. And I knew how it ended, so I guess I really wanted to pose the question and kind of give readers coming into this kind of broken relationship where there's been something factored, something's gone wrong, and then show how they got here and then essentially show what it takes to bring them back together. I guess those were kind of the things I was juggling, grappling with. But yeah, I guess the structure is always building to how did we get to this point and then what happens next, essentially.
Tell us a little bit more about each of your characters then, Efe and Sam. How would you describe them?
I would say Efe is creative. She's probably fairly insular, responsible and malleable. I think for her, her role as the oldest daughter with a more fiery younger sister means that, yeah, she does take on more responsibility than other characters. I don't feel like she's the best at speaking up for herself, or speaking her mind or speaking up at times. So yeah, I definitely feel like she can keep to herself and keep her troubles to herself. And yeah, and I think for her that can be quite debilitating, I guess, because I think she hopefully over the course of the book is learning to be braver. And I guess for Sam, he is very focused and driven, to the extent where he kind of sweeps people up in his grand plans, which he's been planning since he was a child, basically. But I guess essentially he's always known what he's working towards, and he is that focused. And but I guess he's a dreamer. Like he does, he's optimistic. He hopes for the best. He hopes things will work out to a place where he can be a bit blinkered. So I guess those two things in tandem mean that, yeah, I guess I posed some challenges for them.
Yeah, you made them work hard for that love. But what do you think it was that made them fall in love with each other?
I guess it's a few things. I guess it's the fact that they do just keep choosing each other, regardless of whatever or whomever's involved. They do just keep going back together. And I think some of that is shared culture. Some of that is just growing up together. Some of it is just, yeah, them making that conscious choice to come back to each other, to kind of not ignore the pull, and just, yeah, deciding to.
What I loved so much about their relationship is that it really feels authentic. And I was wondering kind of what was the work you did to make their relationship feel real?
I'm not sure. I guess it's probably a few things. Yeah, I guess getting to know them each fairly well as characters. And I guess you're working out what makes them tick and putting them in situations where I got to see what they had in common and see how they support each other at times. And yeah, we're really trying to build something together. I guess it was lots of those elements where they were interacting on the page, I guess, and seeing what it was like. And also, I guess, what other people around them could see, because I guess particularly both of them at points, like they don't have an easy ride. They aren't always together, and they do need other people to kind of look into their relationship at points and kind of remind them that they are good together, or that they do work, and they should kind of keep choosing each other.
I get the sense just from talking to you that you quite enjoy giving your characters like difficult things to work through.
I absolutely do, yeah.
Do you, yeah? Is that the bit you enjoy most?
No, not the most.
Do you prefer making them happy, or do you prefer tearing them apart? That's what I'm going to ask you.
Funny. I think my instinct is probably tear them apart, because I'm just told to add more happy scenes. Definitely in editing, I think there were at least two or three more chapters where I was like, we should make them happy, you're all right. But yeah, I think my instinct was to give them challenges and to see how they coped with things. But I guess a big part of their story is love, is the shared connection, is their relationships, actually giving that space to thrive and to show that yeah, that they are loving life together at points, and they are working tandem at points, and they just yeah, are kind of in theory healing for each other at points. So I guess that's something I wanted to also add in at some point.
One of the things that you touch on, and I think is a really moving part of the novel and also really important, is that you're touching on subjects that haven't necessarily been written about as frequently. And I'm talking about things such as Black women's mental health, and also this idea of having to sacrifice your career and yourself to have a child. And I know obviously that, you know, that does crop up in fiction, but maybe we've seen less stories where it's Black women's stories that are being told. So why was that important for you to kind of talk about and write about those subjects?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think for me, particularly Efe in the book, many of the things she struggles with are things that I get that I've struggled with or I care about. And I guess in a way I was working through those things in fiction. But also, like, I think I really deliberately wanted to break the stigma and things and be like, this is a conversation that does happen to us. We are not excluded. We just aren't great at talking about some of these things. And I feel like, there can be such a culture of, like, I guess pushing things under the carpet or over-spiritualizing things when actually there are very clear things that, like, that could help. And I guess, I really wanted to put that on the page and I guess give people reading it permission to be like, yeah, this is real, or I'm not being overly dramatic, or I guess just give themselves permission to be like, this is life sometimes. And even little things, like I guess deliberately giving Efe a creative career was a conscious choice, because particularly in Ghanaian culture, but a lot of African culture in general, like there is just such a narrow remit over what success can look like and what your career should look like. And the fact that family is so important means that family comes first. But I guess creating character like Efe, who didn't want any of those things and struggled against it, actually was something I really wanted to put down the page and show that she could still have an incredible, thriving life despite, I guess, the kind of confines or expectations around her.
There are points where she's sort of almost in a pressure cooker, because she's got Sam wanting certain things, she's got her family wanting certain things, and there she is trapped in the middle without a voice almost of her own, because she knows the decisions that she makes are going to upset people.
Yeah.
And she's got their wants kind of almost overtaking hers. It's really difficult because you see why their opinions would be important to her and would take a lot of weight, but at the same time you really feel for her because you know it's not what she wants.
Yeah, definitely. That's the environment I consciously created, just because I think that exists, and I felt like for her it kind of would push her to do something, to make a change, to eventually decide what's going to be more important.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So I'd love to talk a little bit more, Crystal, about your writing routine. And just before we started recording, you told me that the next book you're writing, you had the ending in mind and you had the beginning in mind, and it sounds like it was similar for Rootless. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you write. But also, I read in an interview that you've taken part in NaNoWriMo before. So tell us a little bit about kind of how you write. Are you someone that just loves just getting the words on the page as fast as possible? What's your kind of general routine?
Yeah, so funny enough, Rootless was a NaNoWriMo novel.
Oh wow.
To begin with, years ago, and very quickly, but has changed dramatically since then. So I tend to write in the mornings. As soon as I'm up, like, I will grab a cup of tea and climb back into bed and write there, because that's my now luxury. But yeah, I think I am starting a new book. I'm starting and stopping, so I'm struggling to get to new characters, but I'm learning now, trying to write it all over again, that there is something to writing quickly and just giving myself permission to write a terrible first draft and just see what gets down on the page. Because I feel like the self-censoring, the self-checking can just hinder you at points, I guess. I'm going to do it slightly differently. I'm going to give myself a much clearer outline so I know where I'm going. I don't have to throw away as many words. But I think there is something to starting early in the mornings and starting quickly and just, giving yourself permission to stay in the story world as well.
Mm. So are you someone then, because I know, well, I've done NaNoWriMo twice, and I know a lot of people who do it, swear by having a really detailed plan so that when they get up every day and they write their 1,667 words, that they stick to the plan. So are you a planner, or are you more kind of, you see how you feel and write to the ending that you've already got in your head?
Yeah, so I am a planner to some extent, but I am also very open to story changing. So I guess for me, like I said, the book I've written and the book I'm planning to write next, or I'm starting to write next, is, I guess for me, I tend to know the beginning and the end, and sometimes a few random points in between, but normally those bits are clear for me. So for the book I'm starting, I'm a Rootless, I knew the beginning and I knew the end. So I guess it's just giving it shape and working out what happens in between. And yes, I do plan things normally in quite a bit of detail, but I'm more than happy to change the plan along the way, or kind of if I meet characters and they're doing things unexpected, to follow where the story goes.
Yeah, because I saw a bit of advice you gave that was, you suggested that writers need to be open to their manuscript changing so that you don't miss out on kind of uncovering the what the story could actually be underneath. So how did you experience that with Rootless? And it must have changed a bit with your editor and stuff. So how was that experience for you?
Yeah, it did change quite a bit. So I think from my NaNoWriMo draft to the next one, I think I cut about 60,000 words in the end. I think I'd written to 50 and then to 80 and then cut 60, and it was constantly changing.
That's painful.
This is why I'm more a fan of an outline now, because you just lose a lot otherwise. I personally did. So I guess for me, it's all absolutely changes the original first draft, or maybe like first and second draft, was like a lot more focused on FA. And Sam was essentially a framing device. We barely knew him. We barely knew his side of the story. And I think when my agent came on board, she was very curious about him. And there were lots of little things that I knew, but I had to go on a journey of actually discovering him a lot more. So it became less about one person struggling in a marriage and more of their relationship taking the fall, because that was always present, of course. But it wasn't, it didn't look as it looks now. So yes, it definitely changed shape a few times. Lots of things to kind of cut to make space for Sam. And I guess it was just learning the other side of their story.
Mm. How do you feel about the editing process? And so when you lost all those words, was it difficult for you, or do you quite enjoy the kind of rebuilding and polishing what you've already got?
I think I really like selecting things I like, because I think sometimes I'd have a whole chapter and I'd like one word I wanted to keep or something. Like it would be quite ridiculous at points. I think I like that from the point of view of being like, I now have this one shiny line or shiny word that I get to write around. It feels kind of freeing in that sense.
Mm.
But it's definitely sad when you watch your word count go down when it needs to be.
What's your kind of daily word count? Are you someone that just sets like an amount of time to write, or do you think, right, I'm not allowed to go and get a coffee until I've written 1,000 words? What's your day-to-day writing like?
Yeah, I tend to write early when I'm being good, and then I will write until I run out of steam. And if I sit down and I'm really struggling, I will normally pick up a book that I adore until I latch on to like a word or sentence that I love and kind of kicks off something in my brain that means I can start writing again. And normally at that point, I'm writing by hand or jotting things down, and then I'll come back to my laptop when I feel a bit steadier or feel like I have more to say. But I guess it's a few different approaches. I try to just keep going. Sometimes that's like 1,000 words, sometimes that's a lot more. If I just happen to like have energy into the afternoon and later and don't lose focus. But I try to just start and keep going.
I love that idea of picking up books that you love, because I do exactly the same. There's something in other people's words and language that just sets my brain like firing. And then I start to almost hear this other voice in my head, which is me typing away at my laptop. So it's funny how other people's words really help with that writer's block, I think.
I really think so. I think particularly for me, books that made me want to write, like books I think are stunning or adore, recommend to people, like they tend to be the ones I gravitate to when I am stuck in my story.
So you were one of the 40 writers selected for London Library's Emerging Writers Programme. Can you tell us about that experience, how you applied and what came of it?
Yeah, it's funny actually, because I genuinely don't remember applying. So basically I had like a really, this was in 2020, I had like a really weird few months and impulsively decided to quit my job and write a book. And at some point, I'm pretty sure it was on the day I had in my notice, I saw like little advert about it, and I'd never heard of it before, and basically applied and forgot about it. But it literally came at the right time, because by that point we were in lockdown. I was muddling through trying to write this book that I had started and stopped over a number of years, but it kept grabbing me and I wanted to do it justice. So yeah, it just came at the perfect time for me, where I could kind of join the program. I think a few months after leaving my job, and it meant that I had the structure and the accountability, and it just meant that I just had more support as I was writing. I think I really appreciated that, because there were lots of workshops, and we had like a little peer group where we'd send work to each other, just lots of interaction. Even though it was over Zoom in that weird time, but yeah, it was just really brilliant.
Kind of supportive workshops and kind of network groups like that are so important, if you're, particularly when you're starting out, to kind of get that reassurance and validation that what you're doing is good, and it's nice to kind of have that feedback as well. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how you came to get your agent, and then kind of how quickly your book deal came about.
Yeah, it's funny, because I feel incredibly lucky to have my agent. She's just phenomenal. She's just, everything I could have dreamed of. And I remember finishing the draft, because I'd basically run out of steam of it, and I was in a place where I was like, I'm either going to throw it away or I'm going to try and submit to agents. I was very much fed up, and I was like, I don't want to see these people anymore. And then I basically made myself actually finish the last bits of edits I was doing on my own, and then sent it out to a few agents, I think on a Friday or something. And my agent, Juliet, emailed back half an hour later or something ridiculous. and had requested the rest of it. And I was like, oh, maybe someone likes it. And it's her. It's just, I was very much prepared for being like, okay, the first few agents are going to say no, and then I'll kind of refine it and try again with the next three on my list. And she was just incredibly speedy. We kind of chatted over Zoom, and she offered to represent me, and it was really phenomenal actually. And I guess my book deal was slightly different because I signed up for Juliet in I think September, and then went back to work in November, and basically did nothing on the book until Juliet chased me in January, and I was like, oh yeah. So at that point we worked it together for a few months. And then again, I was really lucky with my book deal because basically, again, I got to the place where I had kind of rushed through last edits and I wasn't totally happy, but we had an idea of when we wanted to send it out. And Juliet had been talking to people about it and pitching it for a few months by that point, I believe. So it went out in September. And again, it was just really quick to have first initial interest, and then we had to chase a few people. But I think by 2 weeks later, it sold in the UK, and then maybe another 2 weeks later, it sold in the US. So just yeah, really exciting to be like, oh, people have got it, and they loved it as much as I did, which was just yeah, phenomenal.
Yeah, it's always nice when it kind of happens quite smoothly like that. And it sounds like you've got a really good agent there with Juliet. And yeah, congratulations on doing so well. I was wondering whether there was anything in your kind of publishing journey from kind of when you signed the contract till now that's been difficult or challenging or has been kind of come as a surprise to you, and anything that you think that maybe you've learned to deal with in a particular way, or kind of you think would be good advice for anyone that might be getting published next year. How has it been for you?
I would say, funnily enough, because I am an editor, I actually struggled with the edits. I think it was just getting placed where a lot of life stuff was going on, and I was moving, and work was kind of chaotic at that point in time. And just kind of lots to kind of juggle and manage. So yeah, I remember finding that pretty challenging and just finding the headspace to re-engage with it. I felt like every time I sent it off, I was like, okay, cool, bye. And then back and I was like, oh man, more to do. And I guess to some extent it was learning about your characters in like new settings and environments and changing things that had, for the most part, always been one way. I think that took some more letting go than I was expecting. And I guess something I would say to new writers would actually probably be the post-publication part, just because I know quite a few people who've kind of struggled with going from hours and hours being on your own writing a novel because that's what you enjoy doing, to suddenly having to speak in front of people and do events and publicize your book. Like, I am terrible at telling people about it. Most of my friends and family do it on my behalf now because I just will never mention it to anyone. But it is really challenging, and I feel like you can kind of expect, or you're almost expected to kind of become this incredibly charming, talkative person when you've done this because you spend all of your time alone. And I do feel like writers aren't necessarily prepared for that challenge. And I feel like you can give yourself permission to get there and give yourself permission to not be brilliant at it. And it's not for everyone. I know plenty of people who haven't or aren't always doing big events and stuff like that. And they're just yeah, just absolutely fine.
Do you think your role as an editor gave you kind of a level of, I don't know, preparation or allowed you to understand what the kind of realities would be? Or do you think that it was very different from what you do in your job?
Yes, actually, yeah. I feel like there was a lot more than I know than the average writer, of course, because I'm around it every day. But I guess that's good and bad. It meant that little things like knowing that I absolutely could move my deadline because it's entirely flexible was not helpful in terms of having to like get stuff done. And other little things like, yeah, I guess, yeah, knowing the conversations that happen around a book and when certain things are due or when sales numbers come in meant that I guess I was probably too aware of things and was always measuring up to what I was hopefully expecting of myself and of Rootless. So I think in a way it's really good because I knew, what certain things meant, and I knew how to be paired, and just had more insight. But I guess it could also be negative in terms it meant that I was worrying more than most people would, because they just wouldn't know that's the thing to do.
So finally, I know we've talked a little bit about it already, but can you give us a hint about what you're working on next?
I'm working on a second novel. At the moment, it's set between Ghana and America. And it's basically about two sisters and lots of family secrets that will be unearthed in time.
Brilliant. Well, I know you know the ending already, and I'm not going to weasel that out of you, because we want to keep that secret, but I'm really excited to find out what the next one's going to be about. But in the meantime, thank you so much, Crystal, for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me. It's been amazing.
That was Crystal Zara Appiah talking about her contemporary novel, Rootless, which is out now and available to buy. And if you'd like to support this podcast, debut authors and independent bookshops, you can now shop in the Confessions of a Debut Novelist bookshop, hosted by bookshop.org, which I've linked down below in the show notes. If you fancy buying any of the books you've heard on this podcast, then the majority of them can be found in this bookshop. And if you can, I would really appreciate you supporting me, supporting the authors and independent bookshops by buying them through this online store. Thank you so much for listening. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Or if you've subscribed already, it'd be great if you could leave me a review. See you next time.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.